Notes from America is supported by Future Hindsight, an award-winning podcast that shares big ideas about participating in American democracy, beyond voting, but short of running for office. Join host Mila Atmos for stimulating and incisive conversations with citizen changemakers on topics ranging from gerrymandering, policing equity, and voting rights. In this election year, Future Hindsight offers an unaffiliated perspective into what's at stake and how citizens can make an impact at the local, state, and national level. You'll always come away with something hopeful. Tune in every Thursday to get engaged and stay engaged.
Listener supported, WNYC Studios.
Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
The Supreme Court justices, your thoughts on that?
When asked about President Biden's vow to nominate a black woman to the high court, Mississippi Senator Roger Wicker had this to say.
We're going to go from a nice, stately, left-wing liberal to someone who's probably more in the style of Sonia Sotomayor.
From nice and stately to a woman of color? And that's not even the part that got the good senator in trouble. He went on to call the as-yet-unnamed nominee an affirmative action hire. Strap yourselves in, folks, because this whole nomination process is gonna be a lot.
It's Black History Month, and Joe Biden has made the commitment to nominate a black woman to fill the upcoming vacancy on the Supreme Court. Have you heard that news?
I haven't heard that, actually.
This is my first time hearing about it.
What would it mean for you to have a black woman on the Supreme Court?
It would mean a lot in terms of representation. I think it's definitely important for representation in the Supreme Court, especially in a place where justice isn't really served for minorities. And I guess I'm excited to see where that goes.
I think it's about time that a black woman is on the Supreme Court. However, I'm not going to say that I agree with Joe Biden's announcing it. It could be said to be the affirmative action appointment or something which would kind of diminish her effectiveness.
But I feel like it would mean more if change were to actually come with that. Mm-hmm. So that's what I would hope to see.
Welcome to the show. I'm Kai Wright. The conversation about President Biden's pending nomination to the Supreme Court is still pretty much inside politics, as you just heard when our producer, Regina Dahir, roamed the streets to get a reaction to the news that Biden is going to nominate a black woman. Most people didn't even know what she was talking about. And those were black women she was talking to, I wish I should say. But that's to be understood. In our nation's constitutional design and in our political culture generally, the court stands apart from us. Above us, even. It's the high court, right? But its distance is an illusion. The Supreme Court intimately touches our daily lives. Just ask any woman seeking reproductive health care in the state of Texas today. And a black woman has never served on it. Only three people of color of any sort have ever served on it, actually. 112 white people, I think 109 of them men, have had the final say on what kind of society we inhabit. That is self-evidently the result of a racial and gender quota. One that was once stated openly and then preserved through custom and innuendo and degradation of people like Sonia Sotomayor and like the as yet unnamed black woman who is already being dismissed in some quarters as unqualified. And so whoever gets named, this nomination is likely going to become a fight over race and gender and power. I expect, I worry, I hope I'm wrong, that it will get ugly. And I am just trying to get my own mind ready. So tonight, we will have two conversations to help in that regard. Later in the show, I'll be joined by Ellie Mistal, the justice correspondent for The Nation magazine, to talk about the political dynamics of the court and the nomination process. And right now, I am joined by Fatima Gross Graves, who is president of the National Women's Law Center, where she has spent more than a decade working on behalf of women's rights and thinking particularly about women and girls of color. Fatima, thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, I'm so glad to be here.
Well, let's start with the obvious question, to me at least. What does this coming appointment mean to you personally as a black woman in the law who has spent her life trying to make legal space for women of color?
Well, I should just begin by just saying I'm excited. And I feel a lot of pride to even be in this moment. I'm excited every time I see another name out there, another Black woman attorney who's being introduced to the country, whose record and contributions and credentials are being highlighted in part because of all the many talented Black women attorneys I know whose work and whose views and whose credentials are pretty routinely overlooked and unnamed. And I also feel like, as I've been reflecting on it more these last 2 weeks, it's just so long overdue. I've been thinking, how is it that it is 22 and we even have a question of whether or not a Black woman should be on the Supreme Court?
You clerked in the U.S. Court of Appeals in the Seventh Circuit. What did you see in terms of how often there were Black women on the bench or really anywhere in that space?
So I was lucky enough to clerk on the Seventh Circuit when there was one Black woman on that court, and she was the first. And actually, when she stepped down in during the Trump years, she was replaced by a white woman. And so for a number of years, there were no Black people on the Seventh Circuit where I clerked, which includes Illinois, Wisconsin, and Indiana. And so when I think about the fact that the city of Chicago, for example, is a part of the Seventh Circuit, the idea that there would be no Black women on that court, it's outrageous. And I also just want to name, when I was a law clerk at the time, for more than half the time that I was there, there were no Black women clerks clerking for other judges. So it could be a really isolating and lonely experience to be working as a part of our judiciary system, both back then, but back now. There are still whole courts of appeals, like the Supreme Court, that have no Black women on the court.
Why does it matter? More broadly, why do representational politics matter at all? I can't imagine, for instance, maybe I'm making some assumptions here, but I can't imagine you've been thrilled with Clarence Thomas's role in the Supreme Court, for instance. He is Black. Why does representation matter?
Well, and I will say 30 years ago, the National Women's Law Center cautioned the country and the Judiciary Committee about his nomination, and were disappointed when he was confirmed. And many of our predictions came true. But I really believe it is critical for a couple of reasons. The first is that even though we don't usually talk about it in this way, judges bring their individual experiences and ideas to their decision making. They just do. And so the fact that there are no Black women on the Supreme Court really matters. It means you are missing out on the perspective of having been a Black woman in this country on the court. But it also is a thing that can build trust in our systems. It can give more confidence in the rule of law. And when I think about all the Black women who touch our legal system, who touch our federal judiciary, it raises an alarm that we've had now hundreds of years where they haven't been there. And you mentioned reproductive rights in this country. The court this year is considering whether or not to overturn Roe versus Wade. And there will be no Black women who are a part of that decision-making. Really no Black women who were a part of it at all, arguing the case or considering the case, even though Black women are twice as likely to die from childbirth. And so it does mean a lot to have a court that is representative. It is not everything. And that is why the record of whoever this person is that's nominated will have to be carefully considered. But what was important is that President Biden started there. You know, he started with the fact that he planned to nominate someone of the highest caliber who brought a particular type of outlook on the law, and that person would be the first Black woman to be confirmed to the Supreme Court.
But, you know, I mean, as you heard, one of the people we heard in the introduction to the show said she wished that Joe Biden had not made that vow to name a Black woman because it just set her up for an attack on her qualifications. And, you know, I mean, I think many Black people, certainly I, many women of all sorts can relate to the experience of being perceived as having gotten our opportunities only because of our race or our gender. So I don't know, why make that declaration? Do you think that was important for him to say rather than just do?
Well, what's interesting is those sorts of declarations that you plan to make history are declarations that have been made before, right? That President Reagan made a declaration that he planned to make history by appointing the first woman to the Supreme Court and then followed through on that promise with Justice O'Connor. And President Trump said that he had planned to appoint a woman to replace Justice Ginsburg when she unexpectedly passed during the election. And he did. He followed through on that promise. So I'm not sure why people are surprised by that, but it is a history-making thing that mm-hmm. he planned to do. And I actually think back to someone like Judge Constance Baker Motley, who was the first Black woman to argue at the Supreme Court, and she was the first Black woman to be confirmed as a federal judge. And again, she was overlooked for courts of appeals seats because they weren't sure whether they could take the political risk of appointing a Black woman during her time. The fact that the president named it and actually reaffirmed it without hesitation when he had the opportunity, it actually says a lot about where we are as a country, who we are as a country. That actually is really exciting for me.
Well, you know, if I may say, it also says a lot about where we are politically, where the Democratic Party is politically. I mean, my answer to that question is I wonder, you know, if he hadn't been forced to make this campaign promise, and it was a campaign promise at a time when he desperately needed Black voters, I wonder if we would be hearing, if we would be here now.
I'm not sure. We won't ever know that. But it actually is the case that Black women's participation in our democracy has been talked about. Lots of people thanking Black women all the time. Mm-hmm. And in this moment, this is an opportunity to actually bake a giant barrier, put a Black woman on the court. That feels like a really big thank you and something that, you know, I in some ways I wasn't super surprised that you were interviewing people who were saying, you know, I hadn't heard that. That's interesting news. I think once we actually have a nominee, this person will be introduced to the public. And Black women who are lawyers like me, but Black women generally will be excited. I think women will be excited. I think people in this country will be proud that we are a country that are breaking this barrier.
What is the mood among Black women who are lawyers like you? Is, you know, that's everybody on the streets like, wait, what? I don't follow the news like that. But is it how would you characterize how it's been received?
I will just say it's joyful. I mean, my text threads are blowing up with us naming our fantasy Supreme Court. And actually, some of it has been really emotional, though. People telling stories, reminding themselves what law school was like, reminding ourselves of how we didn't have those sorts of heroes to look up to. And I really have been focused on all the Black women over time who why weren't they on the Supreme Court? Why wasn't Marion Wright Edelman on the Supreme Court? I just feel like this country has lost out on talent because of racial bias, because of gender bias. And we are so lucky that the president put it on the table and reaffirmed it. It may have been a political win for him, but it is a good for this country because he's not going to go against that promise. No. So we're going to get to see the many talented Black women who should have been considered before, and we're going to get to learn about those in our history. It's Black History Month, so it's time for us to actually do a little bit of learning about them too.
And creating some of it. We'll take a break. I'm talking with Fatima Goss-Graves, president of the National Women's Law Center, about the coming debate over President Biden's nomination to the Supreme Court. She has not yet been named, but the president vows she will be Black. Stay with us.
Hey everyone, this is Kusha. I'm a producer. In this episode, you hear us asking for calls from listeners about the pending nomination and the debate it's ignited. We want to hear from you too. Particularly, we want to know, if you're a Black woman, how does this news strike you? Does it mean anything to you? Why or why not? We'd love to hear your perspective. So if you could, send us a message. Voice memos are great, and emails and videos work too. You can record yourself on your phone and email it to anxiety@wnyc.org. Again, that's anxiety@wnyc.org. Thanks so much. Talk to you soon.
Welcome back. I'm Kai Wright, and I'm talking with Fatima Goss-Graves, president of the National Women's Law Center, about the already lively debate over President Biden's nomination to the Supreme Court. Shortly, I'll be joined by Ellie Mastal, justice correspondent for The Nation magazine, and we can take your calls throughout if you've got a question about the pending nomination and the debate over it. Fatima, I have to say, I was thinking during the break about what you said right before we went on break about we've missed out on the opportunity. Missed out on the talent of Black women because of this, and I thought, boy, you know, what an important reframing, and I'm almost ashamed of myself, right? Like we run into the fight, right? Like we want to engage the critique of the idea that a Black woman would be on the Supreme Court, and it's kind of buying into the fact that it would be a problem in the first place. And I don't know, I just throw that to you about the challenge of that, of this kind of discourse of saying, you know, I want to being ready to defend Black people in general and a Black woman in particular in this moment, but also then letting that eat the joy of the moment.
Yeah, and I should be clear that I stand ready to defend whoever she is from attacks that are racist or sexist, whether they come from Capitol Hill or from political organizations, or whether they're repeated by the media. None of that is okay. But I'm also not letting them ruin my joy. I just can't. I feel so lucky to be living in a time where I get to celebrate the first Black woman on the Supreme Court. When I came out of law school, I got to say, I wasn't sure that that was a thing that was going to happen in my lifetime. It didn't seem possible. And part of it is that you keep seeing the same thing. And now, girls who are coming up, they're going to know that it's possible. They're not going to think it would be impossible for me to be on the Supreme Court. So no one's really taking my joy right now.
The person getting the most attention right now, it seems like, as the likely nominee is Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson, who currently serves as on the U.S. Court of Appeals for D.C., which is sort of considered the second most influential court below the Supreme Court. What can you tell us about Judge Jackson?
Well, Judge Jackson has been a judge for a while. She was on the district court in D.C. before being confirmed just last summer. And I will tell you, she was confirmed with support of some Republicans. So she's already had a bipartisan confirmation within the last year. And people who know her well describe her as brilliant and sort of unmatched in her intellect. She went to Harvard for both undergrad and law school and was someone who people had hoped maybe President Obama might put on the Supreme Court when he had an opportunity. So she's not a stranger to the work and is one of the examples of really wonderful people to be considered for this stuff.
But how would you describe her judicial temperament? Where would she fit in the sort of in the lexicon that most of us who aren't lawyers know about the range of what we've seen from Supreme Court justice? How would you characterize her?
Well, people describe her as thoughtful. They describe her as, you know, considered opinions. She also brings an experience that the court doesn't have right now, where she's formerly a public defender. And so her understanding of the criminal system at a time where people are thinking hard about the criminal system is really, really important. And so I think Judge Jackson is someone who the country is just now getting to know. People who practiced before her, though, regard her very highly and have known her for a long time. So some of this sort of like insider stuff, I think we're now being really introduced to her in ways that are wonderful. And I actually really like that she isn't by herself, that there are other names that are being considered too. I think that's important because it just reminds people that, I mean, the president could appoint all nine, indeed, you know, if he had the opportunity indeed, as Black women, and there'd still be a long, long list.
Let's go to Joanne in Toms River, New Jersey. Joanne, welcome to the show.
Yes. Hi. Is this Kai?
This is Kai.
Kai, I love you. I really enjoy
your show. Oh, thank you so much, Joanne. Did you have a question about the court or a feeling about it one way or the other? Go ahead.
My feeling is this, you know, and I respect James Clyburn, but he put pressure on Biden to make that announcement. And I really regret that because now he's given these haters time to build their case against whomever he's nominating. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I just feel that they're so against Biden. You know what I mean?
It's
like, it's not going to be her. It's going to be him that they're going against. Mm-hmm. And they're going to put whomever he chooses through the ringer. Mm-hmm. Because now they got time to converse with themselves and how they're going to attack, you know?
I see. Thank you, Joanne.
I hate to say that, but the human species is a strange species.
Well, we certainly got a lot of evidence of that lately. Thank you, Joanne, for calling and for listening. Fatima, how do you want to respond to what Joanne had to say?
Well, one of the things, Joanne, to think about is no matter when he made this announcement, even if he, you know, boom, surprised people and it was a Black woman, they would have brought the same attacks. That's what we've seen of the nominees who have come forward. Some of it is sort of like the subtle dog whistles, and some of it has been really outrageous and over the top. And each time, I think we have to just remember that these women didn't bring it on themselves. We have to beat it back as soon as it happens and remind the public or whoever is levying these attacks that it's okay, that we're watching, that we don't stand for it. And then we have to just remind ourselves that the words that they are spewing are not reality. So they can call Judge Jackson or whoever it is, whatever name they want, we will beat it back. And then we will sit understanding that how lucky we are as a country, that these are people who are willing to serve.
Let's go to Michael in East Harlem. Michael, welcome to the show.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call.
Do you have a question or a reaction?
I have a comment. I'm Black, and I don't think, well, first of all, let me say, I know that there are tons of qualified Black women. As your guest just said, there are enough Black women to fill the Supreme Court and then some. Tons of qualified Black women. However, I don't think that Biden should have said that he was going to nominate a Black woman. I think he should have just nominated a Black woman, and we wouldn't be hearing the Republicans are leveling all this criticism against this yet to be named nominee. And it's ridiculous. And I think part of it is because he said that he was going to nominate a black woman. Mm-hmm. Secondly, I think it kind of puts an asterisk or taints. It's not fair to the woman who's being nominated. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I think he should have just nominated a black woman and then, you know, mm-hmm. we go from there.
Thank you, Michael. And Fatima, you can hear from callers and what we saw with Regina when our producer Regina went out on the streets and just a lot of folks saying are really worried about the fact that the way this has been framed.
Can I just offer one thing? Over time, people didn't announce that they were only going to nominate white people to the Supreme Court. They didn't make public statements. President Trump didn't announce that he was going to only nominate white people to courts of appeals and nominate no black people to the courts of appeals over a 4-year period. So I don't give credit to not saying your intention. I actually think it is important that President Biden was announcing that he planned to make history here. And it is exactly what he's going to do.
Fatima Goss-Graves is president of the National Women's Law Center. Thank you so much for this time and for your insights on it.
Thanks for having me.
We'll take a break and then continue our conversation about President Biden's pending nomination of a black woman to the Supreme Court. I'll be joined by Ellie Mistal, justice correspondent of The Nation magazine, and we'll take more of your calls. Stay with us.
Carnegie Hall is one of the most famous concert venues in the world.
The first time I walked on the stage, I felt like my feet were moving, but they were not touching the floor.
Join us for If This Hall Could Talk, a new podcast that explores the history of this iconic landmark through the unique items in its archives. I'm your host, Jessica Vosk, and together we'll explore how the past shaped the culture we live in today. Listen to If This Hall Could Talk wherever you get podcasts.
Welcome back. I'm Kai Wright. I'm joined now by my friend and colleague, Ellie Mistal. He's the justice correspondent for The Nation magazine, a regular on our show, and now author of the forthcoming book, Allow Me to Retort, A Black Guy's Guide to the Constitution. Ellie.
Kai, how are you?
Well, if we're honest, you've never actually been asked for permission to retort, Ellie. I don't know about the subject of that book.
Speaking of, can I retort to the last few callers?
Please,
on your program?
Yes.
All right. So in the words of Lady Macbeth, could we please, people, screw our courage to the sticking place? Because the idea that Biden would just like surreptitiously spring a black woman on Republicans and that would somehow make them be nice to her is ridiculous. Have you people met Republicans? Have you people met white people? There is nothing that you can do. The kinds of white people who have a problem with a woman of color on the Supreme Court, there is nothing you can do to appease these people. And I can prove that because if you just have to look at what these people said about Sonia Sotomayor. Every single attack, usually from the same people, by the way, that they are making against the potential Biden black woman nominee, it is, in fact, an attack that they leveled against Sonia Sotomayor when she was nominated by Barack Obama. The same thing. She's not as smart. It's an affirmative action appointment. She doesn't have the qualifications. The exact same things, sometimes from the exact same people. So wake up. There was no way to appoint a black woman to the Supreme Court in a way that would appease the kinds of white folks who have a problem with it.
Fair enough.
Just need to understand that and get ready to defend the nominee and defend the right of non-white people to hold power in this country instead of constantly complaining and whining about the optics of this thing or that thing.
Well,
it's go time.
It's very similar. You know, I said at the beginning of the conversation with Fatima that, you know, most of us, that many Black people and many women can relate to the experience of being being told that you have your opportunity only because of affirmative action. And what you have just said is the sort of response that I heard much in my life from my parents. That is beside the point. They're going to think what they're going to think. You need to move on. So that does register. Let me ask you this. What do you say would be the legacy of Justice Breyer? He is who we've been talking about who's coming, but he's who is stepping off. What is his legacy when it comes to racial justice and women's rights?
You know, I have two things about Breyer, right? One, the man has served for 28 years with honor and integrity throughout his time. And I emphasize that word integrity because you can't say that about all of those people on that court, especially right at this moment, right? Breyer has never had a hint of scandal. He has never had a hint of corruption. He has never had a hint of graft. He has been an upright, upstanding person who did not just have the kind of professional and academic and intellectual qualities to be on the Supreme Court, but had the moral character to be on the Supreme Court. And I think that he should be praised and remembered for that. Yeah, no, he was moderate. He was more centrist than I would have been, especially on some issues of criminal justice, especially on some issues of the Fourth Amendment, kind of illegal search and seizure, some of those issues. He tacked towards the center on those positions. But you know what? He has been, since he has been on the court, probably the strongest advocate against the death penalty, the most outspoken justice against the death penalty, even amongst the other liberals. I don't think we can forget that. And, you know, he's been a reliably solid liberal vote at a time when the court has lurched towards the right in really shocking ways if you look at it historically. So he's been a reliable voice. He served with integrity. And I think that's how he'll be remembered.
Let's go to Hadley, in Lubbock, Maine. Hadley, welcome to the show.
Hi there.
Hello.
So Joe Biden made this statement: "We're going to bring a Black woman to the Supreme Court." I'm totally for that. And then I fear the Senate is going to argue and debate this down, and they're going to use the old argument of affirmative action. And I'm just like, I feel like those protections, we are not there yet. We have to keep these protections in place, because if not, then people can't evolve and they can't move forward. And I'm worried about this. The Supreme Court, to me, is not certainly representative of the country and what's going on. And it would be a blessing to have a Black woman there, especially in light of what's going on in Texas and Florida and all of these majority Southern states, with other states following suit.
Hadley, let's separate out two different things here, right? Because there's the argument about affirmative action, which is a case the Supreme Court will be taking up next year, well, specifically with college admissions. But we can kind of talk about affirmative action either about college admissions or just throughout society, as kind of put that off to the side for a second, right? The nomination of a Black woman to the Supreme Court is not affirmative action. That is not what that is, okay? That is looking at an underrepresented group of people and saying, like, you know what? From this, we are going to pick the most qualified person to be on the Supreme Court, and we're going to focus on this underrepresented group as we look through our options. Because when it comes right down to it, I don't know how many people you guys out there think are qualified to be on the Supreme Court. From where I sit, in a country of about 330 million, I'd guess like a million people at least could do that job. It's not nearly as hard of a job as people think it is. It's harder to be an astronaut, it's harder to be a brain surgeon than it is to sit on a court and be told what the law is by your clerks and other lawyers and make a decision about which way to go. It's really not that difficult. So of the million or so people who could be on the court, all Biden is saying is, like, we have to make, you know, decisions some way. We're going to focus in on this group. Whoever he picks, if we just focus on this one underrepresented group, I promise you this. Most people will not have a better resume than any of the people that Biden's going to put up. You can only have an as good resume as most of the people that Biden is considering. You don't have a better one than that. I also promise you that, like, if it's, you know, one of the people that we've been talking about, Ketanji Brown Jackson, Leandra Kruger, somebody like that, I promise you this, she's going to whoop your butt on a test, all right? She's going to whoop mine too, all right? If you want to put some kind of legal test in front of her, some kind of LSAT in front of her, she's going to whoop people's behinds on that standardized type of test.
Let me ask you about one of the people that's being discussed. So one of the people on the short list that we're hearing about is Judge Michelle Childs, who sits on the District Court for South Carolina. And she's already getting meaningful pushback from the left, both for her record on labor issues and on criminal justice. You know, and of course, at the same time, she's Representative Jim Clyburn's top pick, which is not a trivial matter for Joe Biden. And apparently Lindsey Graham is prepared to get behind her. So this could get sticky in terms of her ability to be a bipartisan pick, but not be someone that a lot of folks on the left can get behind. You warned in a recent column that liberals must not do exactly this kind of thing. But getting back to the representational politic question, isn't that exactly the problem or the danger with focusing on representation, is that you may or may not get somebody who has the policy outcome you're looking for?
Yeah, being Black is not a proxy for being liberal or leftist or progressive or whatever you want to call it, right? There are lots of moderate Blacks. There are lots of Black people who defy labels. I mean, look at the current mayor, Eric Adams. Put him in a box if you dare, because he's gonna challenge your assumptions, right? So being Black is not a proxy for their policy preferences. Being Black is a proxy for you're African American. That's what it is. It's a proxy for your group has been underrepresented in our country in the halls of power for various racist and sexist reasons. That's all it is. Amongst the Black people that he could choose, I hope he chooses somebody particularly left. I hope he chooses somebody particularly progressive. Unfortunately, that ain't Joe Biden, right? Joe Biden does not have a history of going out there and finding the most radical person he can, the most leftist person he can, for a job. He's probably going to pick somebody that's kind of center mass, mainstream, slightly left of center. That's his idea of the country, and that's most likely who he'll pick. The fact that they're Black doesn't make them more left, and I don't know why people sometimes think that it does. It doesn't, right?
So, but I guess
Childs' jurisprudence has been, in the same way that I was saying about Stephen Breyer, right? It's been on the tacked towards the moderate side of the aisle, tacked towards the center mass of the country, as opposed to maybe a more, you know, like a Leandra Kruger, who's a little bit more on the left side of some of these debates, right? But like this. Biden ain't going to nominate me, right?
He sure ain't, Ellie.
So just because the person is Black doesn't mean they're going to be this kind of like flaming liberal. I'll say another thing. Biden's sensibility here is not all that different than your boy Barack Obama's sensibility here. I, for one, happen to think that Obama did not know what he was getting in Sonia Sotomayor. I think when you look at her, when I looked at her cases, when I looked at her jurisprudence on the Second Circuit Court of Appeals, that's the one that covers New York and our neck of the woods, she presented to me as somebody who was going to be quite moderate and quite centrist. And then Sotomayor got a lifetime job, put on the red nail polish, and said, "Let's go." And turned into, has turned into the now lion of the left side of the court, right?
So, well, and she may have been changed by the facts on the ground.
Sometimes it's facts on the ground. Sometimes, and this is, I think, something to remember in general. People who want this job, one of these nine jobs, understand that you got to be within like a very small box to get one of these jobs. And the people that Biden is considering have put themselves in the running by staying within the box. We don't know exactly how they're going to be. Nobody knows exactly how they're going to be once the box is removed and they're on the court for life. We just don't. And that has happened to Republicans, quite frankly, more often than Democrats, right? You've got your David Souters, you've got your Anthony, you've got people who looked like they were going to be one way. But then once they got on the court, John Paul Stevens, you know, a former big liberal lion justice, you know, he was appointed by Nixon. He was appointed, appointed by Ford, I mean. The people who wrote the opinion for Roe v. Wade, Harry Blackmun, he was appointed by Nixon. Like, this stuff happens, right? And so keep that in mind as people are kind of pouring through the histories and qualifications and resumes for any of these justices. We don't know exactly how they're going to be once they get on the court.
All right, we're going to go to Paula in Manhattan. Paula, welcome to the show.
Okay, hello, thank you. I'm not a black woman. I'm an old Jewish woman, but
Congratulations.
I guess I think I still qualify to talk, but
sure.
I wanted to know why there was not an outrage and an outroar and everything else when Trump said he was going to nominate people who were going to get rid of Roe v. Wade. And I'm not absolutely sure of the language, so I don't want to be a little long here. But it was definitely that he was going to appoint conservative judges, and certainly the implication was that they were going to be against Roe v. Wade.
Thank you for that, Paula.
Not just the implication, Paula, not just the implication. You said it exactly right. Remember, Trump is not a person who's particularly eloquent when it comes to his word choice. He said he would only appoint justices who were against Roe v. Wade. Josh Hawley, senator on the Senate Judiciary Committee, said that he would only confirm judges who were against Roe v. Wade. This should have been a huge thing, because while you people are criticizing Biden for saying what kind of person in terms of their kind of gender and ethnic background he's going to support, Trump was straight up telling people what kind of person they were going to support in terms of decisions they would be expected, political decisions they would be expected to make once they got onto the court. Why wasn't that a bigger issue? But Paul, I'll do you one better. Why wasn't it a bigger issue when Trump said, and I quote, "I want to appoint a woman to replace Ginsburg. Why wasn't, if we're now suddenly concerned about gender politics, identity politics? Well, when Trump said that, literally, people forget this. During the Brett Kavanaugh hearings, when he was, you know, that alleged attempted rapist was all that information was coming out, there were people inside the Republican Party saying, pull Kavanaugh back, put up Amy Coney Barrett. She was right there.
That's
they
right.
loved her on the right. And Trump said, you can go find this online, Trump said, I'm saving her for Ginsburg. I'm saving
that's
her
right.
for Ginsburg. That's what he said. Another thing, Paula, let's go all the way back to your boy Ronald Reagan, who said in his campaign that he would nominate the first woman to the Supreme Court. Where was the outrage about gender politics back then in the 80s? When Reagan promised and then did appoint a conservative woman to the Supreme Court? Where was the outrage when George H.W. Bush, after the death of Thurgood Marshall, went out and found the most conservative black man he could find? Clarence Thomas is way more conservative than a white judge that Bush could have gotten through at that time. But because he was black, people were like, oh, okay.
Well, on that point, let's go to Kate in Washington Heights. Kate, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Can you hear me?
We can.
Okay, great.
Indeed.
Are there any conservative-leaning black women that Biden would consider nominating?
Yeah.
Who are they?
Yeah, no, I just don't. I don't think there are.
No, there aren't any, or no, there aren't any that he would consider nominating?
No, there aren't any that he would consider nominating, I don't think. You got to remember, where do we get, for the most part, where do we get Supreme Court justices? Well, we get them from the lower courts, the courts of appeals and the district courts, right? Donald Trump was the first president since Richard Nixon to appoint zero black people to the lower courts. Zero. 85% of his appointments were white. 0% were black. And 75% of his appointments were men. And he made a record number of appointments in his first 4 years. So the bench for Republicans, the bench of conservative-leaning people of color just isn't there because those guys won't do it. It really is the Republicans who seem obsessed with race and gender when it comes to their appointments, that they just don't appoint people of color and women. So really the most conservative person of color they have on their side is crazy person Naomi Rao. She's a former Clarence Thomas clerk, has had some really, I think, awful writings from school about kind of victim blaming when it comes to rape. She's written about, like, why are you wearing lipstick then? I mean, like, that level of grossness. She's come out, she has a Law Review article where she advocates dwarf tossing, like literal dwarf tossing, as a constitutionally acceptable proposition. So she's one of those people. She is on the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals, the same court as Brown Jackson is on, the same court that Merrick Garland came from, the kind of feeder court for the Supreme Court. And she's their main woman of color that they promote.
But let me push you on this, though, because, all right, so, you know, Joe Manchin and Lisa Murkowski were on CNN this morning together, both saying what has been characterized as reasonable sounding things, it seems to me they were, about they're happy to support a black woman as long as they get bipartisan support, which sounded like maybe a plug for Judge Childs to me. But the question is, do you see anyone that he would appoint that could get Republican votes?
Yes. Yes. Ketanji Brown Jackson was confirmed at the beginning of Biden's term to the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals with 53 votes. All 50 Democrats that included Sinema and Manchin, so like whatever their handlers do to those people, said that they could vote with the Democrats that time. And they got the votes of Susan Collins, Lisa Murkowski, and Lindsey Graham. That's who Brown Jackson got. Candace Jackson Akume, a black woman appointed to the 7th Circuit Court of Appeals, 53 votes. Collins, Murkowski, and Graham. There's no reason why Brown Jackson or Jackson Akume shouldn't get Collins, Graham, and Murkowski again. There's just no, I mean, they might not, because those people are dripping flaming hypocrites. But if they weren't dripping flaming hypocrites, there'd be no reason to think that she wouldn't get those same 53 votes that she got last time. So I absolutely, look, I'm still, call me naive and you can have me back to make fun of me if I look like an idiot. But I don't actually think this confirmation battle is going to be all that hard, because Biden can literally pick from a couple of people who these Republicans voted for less than a year ago.
I'm going to stop you there because we're running out of time, and I want to give Juliet in Newark, New Jersey, the last word. Juliet, welcome to the show.
Yes, Kai, good evening. I'm so grateful to be on. And I want to say to your guests, you have blown me away. And I agree with President Biden with being honest, saying that he wants to pick a black woman to be on the Supreme Court, because I know there's a black woman out there among all the others that could go on the Supreme Court and stand up on her own. Okay? And I stop labeling us. We may be black, but we are educated. We are smart. And this is what people don't want to realize.
Thank you.
Because don't judge me by the color of my skin.
Juliet, thank you so much. Go ahead, Ellie.
Can I spin off to this? One of the things is that I think that, look, I come from the Kermit the Frog school of Supreme Court nominations. I want more dogs and cats and bears and chickens and frogs and things. More. And the way I want the Supreme Court to look more like America, and I can't do that with 9. One of the reasons why I'm in favor of court expansion is that we need the first Asian American on the court. We need the first Indian American on the court. We need the first openly gay American on the court. We need more on the court.
Pack those courts. Ellie Mistal, pack those courts is your claim to fame. And I hear you. Ellie Mistal is the justice correspondent for The Nation. His new book is called Allow Me to Retort, A Black Guy's Guide to the Constitution. Thanks to all those who called in. You can keep coming at us at anxiety@wnyc.org. The United States of Anxiety is a production of WNYC Studios. Our theme music was written by Hannes Brown and performed by the Outer Borough Brass Band. Sound design by Jared Paul. Milton Ruiz was on the boards for the live show. Our team also includes Emily Botine, Regina DeHeer, Karen Filman, and Kusha Navadar. And I am Kai Wright. You can keep in touch with me on Twitter at Kai_Wright. And of course, you can find me on the live show next Sunday, 6 p.m. Eastern. You can stream it at WNYC.org or tell your smart speaker to play WNYC. Until then, take care of yourselves and thanks for listening.
Notes from America is supported by Future Hindsight, an award-winning podcast that shares big ideas about participating in American democracy beyond voting, but short of running for office. Join host Mila Atmos for stimulating and incisive conversations with citizen changemakers on topics ranging from gerrymandering, policing equity, and voting rights. In this election year, Future Hindsight offers an unaffiliated perspective into what's at stake and how citizens can make an impact at the local, state, and national level. You'll always come away with something hopeful. Tune in every Thursday to get engaged and stay engaged.